Blog Talk Radio. Kaddish. For salvation, Kaddish. For redemption, Kaddish. For forgiveness, Kaddish. For health, Kaddish. For all the world's victims, Kaddish. For all the Holocaust victims, Kaddish.
that was Ofra Haza Kaddish, and I actually played that by accident, but I do love that song. I am joined tonight by my co-host, Amy Kavanaugh. Amy, are you with us?
Yep. Can you hear me okay?
Yes. Thank you so much for joining me tonight. And
I'm
of course,
to be here.
Good, good. And of course, tonight we have Larry Doc Malerba, who's I'm going to read his bio right now to you guys, but we're going to find out much more from him personally, too, when we bring him on in a minute. Okay, Larry is a DO, a DHT, and is a homeopathic doctor, author, and educator. For more than 25 years, Dr. Malerba has been a trailblazer of new paradigm medical thinking. Along the way, he sought to build bridges between holistic healing, conventional medical science, and spirituality. He's a leading proponent of a green revolution in the study of health and the practice of healing. In his book, Green Medicine, Dr. Malerba advocates for a new understanding of healing that respects medical diversity and incorporates the practical knowledge and wisdom inherent in all healing traditions. He challenges mainstream medicine's narrow and overly simplistic focus on physical symptoms and embraces an approach that provides whole person healing for body, mind, and spirit. So, and the list goes on of his what he's all about, but we're going to actually bring him on and ask him face-to-face almost. Hey, Larry.
Hi, Kareen. How you doing?
Okay, and Amy's with me as well.
Hi, Amy.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you guys.
Thank you. Thrilled to have you on. So I just want to say, Larry, to begin with, Amy actually turned me on to a great article that you wrote called The Biases That Shape Our Broken Medical System. And this is on the website Academy. It's AIHM, which is the Academy of Integrative Health and Medicine. And Larry, I thought this was a great article. You know, it starts out, if you guys haven't read it yet, we can probably all agree that the profit motive is the greatest source of dysfunction in American medicine. Now, so when you got into practicing medicine, I mean, how did you, you know, what made you want to do this? What was the source of you wanting to start this, you know, green medicine?
I think I was always predisposed in that direction right from the beginning. My original intention was to go into psychiatry, which I did briefly. In my residency training, I started to, study psychiatry. But along the way in medical school, I bumped into a professor at the family practice clinic who was practicing homeopathy. And he had this sort of unique situation where the university gave him a clinic, and people would come to his clinic, and he would ask them if they wanted conventional medicine or homeopathic medicine, and he would kind of leave it up to them. And I had the opportunity to sit there and watch him practice many, many months for year after year and learned all I knew about homeopathy from him while I was going through conventional medical school, my osteopathic medical training. And so by the time I was done, I was convinced, having compared the two systems side by side, that the patients who were getting the homeopathic care were by far coming out better off, healthier, stronger, and getting better results. So that was that influenced me strongly. And then I went on and did my residency training for a year and practiced then I worked in a psychiatric emergency room for a couple years. And when I finally was ready, then I opened my homeopathic practice. So all that influenced me and I had that unique opportunity to see the two systems side by side.
Right, right. And of course, you talk about, incorporating the spirit and things like, you say it's a quick fix for the traditional Western medicine. They go after, say you have arthritis or something, but they don't uncover what the root cause is. Now, how do you, in your practice, because I know I go to a holistic doctor myself, and he actually invented NRT. I don't know if you know what that is, but, he does like the reflexology and things. Is that what you do too, the reflexology or the testing of the, the strength of your arm and things like that?
I do a smattering of things, but I do mostly homeopathy, which is a sort of system unto itself. The basic premise is that, you don't even bother trying to understand, to explain illness, to explain disease in conventional terms, like the example you gave of arthritis, they may explain that as inflammation or an autoimmune disorder and so on and so forth. Homeopathy kind of bypasses that and doesn't bother with sort of these logical, rational explanations of illness, and instead looks directly at the experiential nature of the problem that the person has. So in other words, I could see any number of different people who have arthritis, and so I'll see a person like that, and I'll say, well, tell me the story. Tell me your story about your arthritis. And they'll start to launch into, my ANA was elevated, and I had a rheumatoid factor, and I'll say, no, I don't want to know about the scientific aspect of your arthritis. I understand that. I want to know about your experience. Oh, okay, well, let's see. It started, I think, about 5 years ago, and it started in my right hand, and then it moved to my left hand, and then it was in my right knee, and then it moved to my left knee. And I'll say, okay, so that's interesting. What happened before the onset of that 5 years ago? And I'll make them think, right, about and start to connect the events in their lives. And they'll say, oh, gee, that was the time when I was going through a divorce, and I lost my confidence, and, it started to affect me, and that's about when my arthritis started to act up. And so then we'll go into the specific details of the arthritis, and they'll tell me about your arthritis. Well, my arthritis is notoriously, it's like clockwork. Every day around 4 o'clock in the afternoon, it starts to act up and give me troubles. I don't know why, but that's the time it does, And it has had this funny pattern of starting in my right hand, then my left, then my right knee, then my left. And you know what? Lately, it's my right ankle, and then I'm wondering if it's going to go to my left ankle. So you see these patterns of symptomatology and the connections to people's lives, and you start to form a picture of this person's version of what conventional medicine calls arthritis, and then you seek a solution that matches that pattern. And that's what homeopathy is all about. So there is actually a homeopathic medicine called lycopodium, which is made from a specific plant, which is known to get symptoms that start on the right side of the body and move to the left and tend to be aggravated around 4 o'clock in the afternoon and tend to be accompanied or tend to manifest in people who lose their confidence, right? So you piece together this story and you see this pattern, and there's this substance in nature that can actually cause these symptoms, right? That's what homeopathy is all about. The thing that can cause your symptoms, that can mimic the symptom profile that the person has, is the very thing that can actually reverse their condition, right? And that's
right.
what's so cool about homeopathy. To me, all people's illnesses are reflections of archetypal energetic patterns in nature. And if we study nature and understand the various plant, mineral, and animal substances in nature and understand the symptoms they're associated with and that they can cause, you can use them to actually help people who have similar symptom patterns.
Mm-hmm. Right. And you say in this article also, Larry, perhaps the most problematic aspect of Western medicine is its inability to come to terms with issues of non-physical reality. It tries to force the multidimensional nature of human health experiences into a strictly materialistic framework. How often do you think that an illness comes from something, like you mentioned, like, oh, the arthritis patient said, oh, I was going through a hard time at that, you know, when the onset of that happened to me. How often do you think that that is the case, that our illnesses come from our spiritual or emotional bodies?
Right. That's a great question, because the answer, as far as I'm concerned, is almost always. The exception may be, like if I trip and I sprain my ankle, you know. Even that, you could argue there are certain forces at play and karmic effects and so on and so forth that play into people's lives. But anyway, you know, most illness manifests at first on the mental, emotional, spiritual level in some way or other. And it's often imperceptible or undetectable, or in many cases the person themselves is not even aware of it, especially in our culture where we're trained not to pay attention to ourselves and trained to pop pills to blot out symptoms and not think about anything. So we don't think about where these things come from. But I guarantee you, if you sit down and talk to anybody and really give them the space and the freedom to express, you know, what they really think, a lot of people will just tell you straight out, you know, I know where this came from. This came from the grief I had over the death of my father, you know. Or someone will say, this came from when I was 10 years old and I saw that movie, The Exorcist, and it scared the crap out of me. And ever since then, I've had this and this and this develop over time, right? And
right.
These things are not coincidental. They happen first on the mental, emotional, or spiritual level and gradually creep in to the physical level over the course of time. It can happen overnight, you know. My loved one can drop dead, and the next day I have my first migraine, and then for the rest of my life I have migraines. Or it can be slow and cumulative, and it could happen over the course of years, right? Or, you know, I'm a teenager who started to grow up and go my own way, and my father gave me resistance, and we had a lot of struggle and fight, and he tried to hold me down, and he criticized me, and I felt, emotionally abused by him, and that's when, you know, the trouble began, right? And so these sorts of things happen in everybody's lives, but we just don't draw the connections between the psychic origins and the, you know, the physical manifestation of them. I mean, that's what holistic medicine and psi studies have in common. We both believe in the reality of consciousness, and in, by contrast, conventional medicine may give lip service to psychosomatic something or other, you know, but in reality, it ignores consciousness and only focuses strictly on the physical dimension of illness. And that's why it is so inclined to create all kinds of side effects and casualties in its treatments because it doesn't understand the nature of the whole person. And when you just indiscriminately suppress physical symptoms, you can actually push the illness back onto the mental-emotional level. You know, and that's what illness is all about, right? Illness is, to me, mental, emotional, spiritual, psychic issues that have become bogged down and stuck and unable to be resolved, or we become unaware of them and don't even know that they're there, and instead we manifest symptoms on a physical level, and those physical symptoms are little cues telling us there's something wrong on a deeper level, you know, in most cases.
But I'm going to play devil's advocate here for a second, because, you know, there's the Louise Hay book, You Can Heal Your Life, and I think in some cases it's sort of an oversimplification. You know, I was breast cancer, right? So, you know, close to the heart chakra, real easy to say, oh, you know, you had problems accepting and receiving love. Therefore, you got breast cancer. And it sounds to me, you know, I'm sort of looking at disease sort of as, you know, the same way we come down and take human form for a while, sort of these thoughts just start going at a lower vibration and, you know, create an entity, the entity being the disease. But once that mass has been created, you know, once the disease has been created, even if it is generated by thought, is it as easy as, oh, if I just start receiving and giving more love, my breast cancer will go away?
Right. That's a great, great challenge. I like that. So I understand what you're saying. And so it's like, in a sense, it's blaming. There's a tendency to blame people for their problems. And the implication there is, well, if you just had gotten your act together, you wouldn't have cancer, right?
That's how it comes out. And I don't think that,
no.
You know, again, we're forced to use words. But that, you know, when someone has a disease or has these symptoms and causes them problems in their life, and it gets reduced to, you can just change your mind and it will go away. That seems
right
to me to be a bit of an oversimplification.
Definitely. I definitely agree. And I do think in this kind of modern age, there's this oversimplified new agey approach to, if you just change your mind, everything's going to be okay. And that's not true. I mean, it's true sometimes. You know, certainly you can do affirmations and repeat your mantra and so on and so forth, and you can definitely make an impact on things. But to me, that guy with the arthritis who lost his confidence, that's not something he has control over, you know, and that's not something that most people have control over. Even if you become aware of it and spend 3 years in talk therapy trying to figure out how to regain your confidence, it often doesn't work, because to me, those things like a lack of confidence or grief over the death of a loved one leave energetic scars, leave marks that are not easily changed through simple measures. They need to be literally removed by something of an equal nature. So it needs to be dealt with often by an energetic form of medicine, an energy medicine, to deal with the energetic shock to the psyche that took place, right? And so you can't just sort of make people feel bad and say, oh, you just had problems receiving love, you know. And it's true that while the cancer may be an illness that's manifesting in a lower vibration, like you say, on the physical level, it still needs to be approached from all angles, ideally, to get the best results, right? So So
right, can't just give somebody a copy of The Secret and a crystal and send them on their way.
Definitely not, right? You got to say, okay, you got a breast lump there. Let's start by having that removed. Let's get rid of that, okay? And then let's change your diet. Let's change your lifestyle. And let's sit down and examine your psyche. And let's start, maybe we need to do some shamanic work. And let's do some energy medicine work and give you some homeopathic treatment. And you kind of attack something as deep and complex as cancer from all angles, and you're going to get better results, right? But if you, like, do the opposite and just say, okay, let's see, Joe Blow, who has lost his confidence, got arthritis, and we're going to give him an anti-inflammatory drug to suppress the inflammation, well, you're not dealing with the source of the problem, of course, right? So he continues on in life with that same lack of confidence and the same issues surrounding it, and all you're going to do is redirect the energy of that problem to somewhere else, oftentimes to a deeper location, right? So you don't treat things suppressively through using drugs or surgeries and wind up with healthier people. You wind up with illnesses that are redirected to different places because you never do deal with the source of the problem to begin with. So it may be that the anti-inflammatory drug helps the arthritis seemingly get better, but then, you know, 6 months later that person develops high blood pressure. And that's just, to me, is just a continuation of the same thing. It's not something new or different. It's a logical extension of the form of treatment that person's choosing, right?
Oh, but I see that all the time in my hospice work. I see more people dying of treatment than be it side effects of their medications or complications from basically being incarcerated in a hospital for too long than I do of the actual diseases. And I know just in my personal life that when there's lessons to be learned, if I don't learn the lesson gets harder. So I would presume that, the body does the same thing. If you're not learning the lesson associated with this situation, it's
right.
It's going to get your attention in other, again, it's sort of a simplification of it, but
right. And then, well, the nice thing too is that if you instead of thinking of it as you got to learn your lesson, which is true on a certain level, right? It's something that can be helped literally. That I see, I've been doing it for 20 plus years with homeopathy, where someone sits there and says to me, let's say they come in for treatment for their asthma, and I find out that, they also have warts, and I see the warts, they show me the warts on their hands, and I say, how do those warts make you feel? And they say, oh, it makes me feel ugly. And so immediately I'm tipped off to an idea because I know a pattern of a certain remedy substance, a certain plant substance that fits people who say, I've always felt that there's something wrong with me, and I've always felt ashamed of that, and so I try to hide that kind of dirty little secret that I carry around, and I hope that people don't find out about it, because if they ever found out about it, how could they possibly love me, right? And so that thought pattern can be attached to any number of things, commonly to warts and herpes, right? And so when I see that, I give people that remedy, and they'll come back and literally say, wow, it's strange, but I don't feel that way anymore, and that's changed, and I started to do things that I've never done before in my life, keeping in mind that everybody's pattern is different, so not everybody who has warts says the same thing. They don't all say, oh, those warts make me feel ugly and ashamed of myself. some people don't give a hoot and don't care, and they say, yeah, take a look at my warts, you know. And so everybody's different, and you can trace these psychic connections. Not to say that those psychic connections were the actual causes of their illnesses. Sometimes they're just patterns that manifest in people, patterns of symptoms, mental and emotional. And those can be broken. They can be changed. They can be altered, you know. So you can spend a lifetime trying to learn the lesson of how to love myself instead of getting down on myself and feeling like I have a dirty secret to hide. Or if you're lucky enough to get the right homeopathic medicine, it can literally change it almost overnight and free you from that and allow you to move forward and allow your consciousness to change. That's what's so cool about it.
You bring up a very important point, and that is that everybody is different, because now with, you know, our ascended master Google at our fingertips, there's this tendency to just go, oh, you know, I'm having a problem with this. Oh, tea tree oil. Oh, frankincense. You know, like, and it's not one size fits all, because we are all so different.
Right, absolutely. I mean, that's kind of the disease of modern culture, you know. It's like the same mentality that is applied to drugs is also applied to all these newfangled alternative treatments. So every new thing that comes out is suddenly the cure-all for everything. And the minute you see that, you know that's a bunch of hooey, you know. So
It's basically dogma. I mean, we're creating, you know, and it brings the same problems along with it. Anyway, Corrine, you were going to ask something, and it is your show.
No, I appreciate you talking, asking all these questions and sharing your story, Amy. So, Larry, okay, now, and I know this through what Amy told me previously. When I'll tell you my little personal story about vaccines. I go to a traditional doctor as well, and she always tries to talk me into getting the vaccine. Now, you're preaching to the choir with me, because I'm already totally vaccines. That is so indicative of a fix-all, one-shot fixes-all people. And it's such bullshit. Now, tell me, Larry, give me a good argument why I should not get a flu shot or another kind of vaccine, perhaps.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, basically, I do believe that most vaccines are more trouble and more danger than they're worth. My own children have never been vaccinated. I have three adult children, and they're healthy as horses, and they do great. But vaccines are a faith-based medical institution. There's literally almost no science behind vaccines working. There's a lot of medical prejudice behind vaccines. There's all these things I talk about in my newest book, Metaphysics and Medicine, about, you know, the biases of medicine, the philosophical biases of medicine predispose it to believe in things that make logical sense. And of course, logic doesn't always equate to reality. So in other words, the logic behind vaccines sounds scientific, but in reality, it doesn't pan out to be true. And you see evidence of this all over the place. The medical science ignores the reality of what vaccines do. They constantly, if you read any article about the flu shot or vaccines that come out in the mainstream press, they repeat the same talking points over and over and over and over again. And all those talking points are just faith-based ideas. There's no reality to them. So the side effects of vaccines are very real, so real that they had to create a government entity to cover individuals who are injured by vaccines, to give them financial compensation for the horrific things that can happen. And there's a huge government agency that compensates people who will get sick from vaccines. And yet all we ever hear is that vaccines are safe, vaccines are safe, vaccines are safe. When in reality, vaccines are a form of immunological roulette, right?
Yeah,
You are lucky if you survive. You're one of the lucky ones, right? In truth, the majority survive, but there's a whole lot of people who don't, and they get really sick, and they can have all kinds of horrible problems. That's where much of, as far as I'm concerned, that's where the vast majority of autism comes from. That's where the vast majority of children's chronic illnesses are coming from. That's why we have this giant epidemic of kids who have things like allergies and asthma and neurologic disorders and tics and attention deficit problems and you name it. All kinds of crazy stuff is occurring because we are injecting these foreign agents into our children's systems that we have little knowledge of what they really do. And when one of those agents causes a reaction, an autoimmune reaction, the body reacts against that thing that's been injected, it can cause any number of problems that can be short-term or can wind up being long-term chronic, causing long-term chronic illness. You know, in the case of flu shot, you could just wind up getting flu symptoms from your flu shot. And that's, consider yourself lucky if that's all you get, you know?
Yeah, your parents could be planning your funeral. You know what I mean?
Oh, well, there are lots of deaths that occur from the various vaccines. But the CDC, you know, the CDC documents it. Many of them are not reported. The other thing about vaccines, which is really important to understand, is that most illnesses like, you know, measles, mumps, diphtheria, pertussis, and so on, they originally erupted into the population, large numbers of people getting those diseases, and over the course of time, they slowly began to decline. And by the time scientists and medicine were able to create vaccines for those things, in almost all cases, they were 90% gone from the population. The whole epidemic had settled down. So if you look at the graph, the historical graphs of the rise and fall of those diseases, they rose in the beginning. Vaccines were introduced at the very end of the bell curve when the whole thing had settled down, and science claims victory and says, see, we've eradicated these diseases. It's just bad scientific thinking, you know. It's really bad scientific thinking. It's wishful thinking. It's faith-based thinking. And so, in my opinion, you know, the original question was about the flu shot, you know. You're better off getting the flu, and if you do get the flu, there's all kinds of measures you can take that can help you through other than standard antivirals, which are pretty weak and aren't worth taking as far as I'm concerned. You know, there are other measures to use for the flu.
Right. And, I mean, is it really, Larry, a case of follow the money in the traditional Western medicine world? Because it seems that way to me. Now, Bill Gates, who's one of the richest people on Earth, giving polio vaccines in India, really? What is that all about? You know what I mean?
Well, certainly. On one level, it's all about money, right? The big drug companies are happy to make their money. There would be no vaccines at all if the U.S. government did not set up the vaccine compensation fund, the vaccine injury compensation fund, because all the drug makers threatened to stop making the vaccines because so many people were bringing lawsuits against those companies. They said, we're not doing this anymore. So the government came along and said, okay, we'll set up a compensation fund, and if someone gets injured, we will prohibit them from suing you, and they will first have to come to us to seek compensation, right? So that's the only way there are vaccines anyway. Now, Bill Gates, I don't doubt Bill Gates is well-intentioned. He means well. I just think he doesn't get it, and he doesn't understand the reality of what's going on. That's all, you know.
Well, he's damaging lots of, or killing, you know, I don't know how many deaths there's been, but there's certainly been plenty of injuries from his forced vaccination over there.
Well, yeah, sure, the more vaccines you administer, you're going to have more casualties. And all these scientists, you know, the drug companies themselves are guilty of promoting these drugs that cause harm. Doctors are, you know, guilty of not looking deep enough, as far as I'm concerned, into the true circumstances of things and looking the other way or buying into the dogma and, you know, or being afraid to buck the system. And so they contribute to the problem, you know, and everybody in their way is contributing to the problem.
And as you said in your article, most doctors believe their own rhetoric. They're spouting rhetoric that they, you know, like when I asked my doctor, well, can you show me what's in this vaccine? She said, oh, well, there's no mercury in it. And I said, I didn't ask that. I asked to see what's, so she couldn't find the, I wasn't going to take it anyways, but she couldn't find it. And I said, well, so are you giving also the Gardasil vaccine to young girls? That's another hoax of a cure for cervical cancer. It's absolute bullshit. So, I mean, as you can see, I'm pretty, I get pretty heated about this.
No, I can hear you.
Go ahead.
I wrote about the Gardasil vaccine in my first book in 2010 in Green Medicine and explained in detail the faulty logic behind the Gardasil vaccine and the way it's supposed to prevent cancer by preventing HPV and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, the reality is there have been a good number of deaths due to the Gardasil vaccine, and those are downplayed in the press. No one wants to hear about it. No one wants to talk about it. And everyone continues on in this sort of faith-based belief in the power of science and the power of vaccines, when in fact it has nothing to do with science. It's not very scientific. It's faith-based, and it's causing harm.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Harm, and I don't know how many deaths there are now due to the Gardasil vaccine. But, man, if you go and watch those videos, and you probably have, of the girls that have died from this, and, you know, Governor Perry enforcing it in Texas, that, you know, girls as young as 9 years old were getting. I mean, it's just, it's so criminal. I just, you know, and so there's a reason why a lot of us look at doctors as pill-pushing jerks. So,
right,
I,
you know, I wouldn't be as harsh as you. I think, you know, doctors mean well, but they've been trained in a certain system, and they believe in it, and it's hard for them to do otherwise, and there's such a giant factor of groupthink that very few of them have the courage or strength to buck that system, you know. And there are all kinds of tricks that are played, all kinds of psychological, self-delusional tricks that are played in order to continue believing what they believe. So, for example, when that girl gets that Gardasil vaccine and within a couple of days is very sick with some strange neurologic disorder, science turns around and says, well, there's no conclusive evidence that it was caused by the Gardasil vaccine, right? And maybe it was caused by some pre-existing condition or some latent condition that led to this problem. So they play all kinds of mind games that allow them to rationalize away the connection, the obvious connection between I was fine yesterday, I got the shot today, and the next day I was sick as a dog, you know. So it's very hard to deal with the medical system and all the various defenses that they put up in the name of science to intimidate people into shutting up and not challenging what they're doing, you know. And I think we have to challenge them, and we have to challenge them calmly and rationally and point out the flaws in their thinking and not just, you know, trash medicine, because there's a lot of good stuff to medicine, too. There's many things we couldn't do without, of course, right? Thank God we have, you know, the emergency room on the corner in case I break my leg or slash an artery and start to hemorrhage or whatever, you know. And thank God there's insulin for diabetics and so on and so forth. We need these things, but we need to take the best of medicine and combine it with a whole lot of other great alternatives to make a better, healthier, more effective, safer system of medical care, greener medical care system.
Right, right. And that's, now, where are you located, Larry?
I'm located just outside of Albany in New York, upstate New York.
Okay, and I'm sure you have a fantastic practice going there. If I didn't already have a holistic doctor here, I would definitely visit you. But I encourage anyone in that area. Now, you can do work in person, or do you do it elsewise too?
I mean, it's ideal to see someone in person the first time, and sometimes after that I'll do distance treatment via the phone or via Skype, you know. And every once in a while I'll treat someone via Skype because they're so far away that it's not practical to see them face-to-face, you know. So sometimes I do that.
Right. Now, okay, so I just want to tell you one other thing about my personal health. So I was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis in 2004, I think.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. thank you. So immediately my neurologist said, oh, get on this shot, you know, get on this, it was called Avonex. You might be familiar with it.
Right.
And it made me so sick for about 2.5 days.
Right.
And I had to take it once a week. And so two and a half of those days out of the week, I was just like, you had the worst flu. That's the way it felt. Besides the fact that the needle seemed to me to be about 10 inches long, and I hated needles to begin with. But anyway, so after I'd been taking the shot for about 5 years, I decided, after I called the pharmacist and asked him what was in the shot, he couldn't tell me what was in the shot except that there was... I'm sorry to laugh.
Proprietary secret.
No, he said something about German hamster protein or something. And I was like, okay. Well, anyways, he couldn't really tell me what the hell was in there, but...
That could be why you were growing fur on your cheeks, huh?
And burrowing in sawdust, too, Larry.
And you talk so fast.
So anyways, I stopped taking the shot, and I went to see this holistic doctor that I go to now for the first time. And so since then, I've been, you know, on the protocol that he's put me on. It's, of course, all natural stuff. But one of the things, well, there's, like, I love the names of these herbs, Larry, like the different tinctures, you know. And so one of them was called Old Man of the Mountain. Are you familiar with this?
No, I don't know that one.
Okay. Well, anyways, they crack me up, the names. But anyways, so I was just wondering, like, when you prescribe something for someone, like, you know, I mean, obviously you go through a lot to prescribe what you prescribe, but is there overall for a person's health, would you recommend anything that, you know, for just, you know, giving you perhaps more energy or building your immune system? Is there anything that you can point to for most people?
Sure, sure. I mean, if you, again, if you attack it from all angles, everyone should be exercising reasonably, right? Without going overboard, without getting crazy about it. Everyone should be eating as healthy as they can, again, without going overboard. I don't buy into the kind of extreme foodie movement where people are paranoid about every little thing they put in their mouth. That, to me, is a disease unto itself. But it makes perfect sense to eat as much healthy, natural, unprocessed, untainted food as possible. In fact, it's, you don't want to eat as much food as possible. You want to restrict your calories, keep them to a minimum, not to overdo the calories. You want to take care of yourself mentally, emotionally, and spiritually, so you would do something like, I mean, the ideal to me is yoga. You could also do meditation or something like Tai Chi. And, of course, to me, on the spiritual level, everybody's got their own version of spirituality, so it's important to understand that and respect that. But something like ritual on a spiritual level can be very powerful and very helpful to maintain good health. And everybody should be self-aware and therefore be able to talk and reflect about the nature of their own selves and their emotions and how they feel about things, and to be as aware as possible about, you know, your state of mind and your state of emotions. So you put that all together, and that's like a powerful package for maintaining health as well as can be done. Now, the problem can be that oftentimes, in spite of all that, we still have illnesses, or we still get illnesses, you know. It's interesting that you bring up MS. I just saw someone this morning in my own office with MS who I've been treating for maybe a couple years now. And when she first came to me, she described her MS symptoms. And as I always do, I looked for all sorts of other things to see if there's some kind of pattern. And it turned out that she had a tendency to internalize her emotions. She had a tendency to kind of be almost overly psychologically independent, not relying on other people.
Mm-hmm.
She had a distinct craving for salty foods. She had a distinct craving for starchy foods. She had a fear of heights and a fear of robbers, which is, you know, to say fear that someone's going to break into the house at night. So every night I double and triple check the locks and the windows and the doors. So that to me was a very familiar pattern for a remedy that I have used a good number of times in cases of MS. And when I gave her that, the first time I gave it to her, she came back and almost immediately reported, you know, within about 4 weeks, a significant reduction in her MS symptoms and a remarkable change on the psychological level, which is what you really want, you know. You don't
right.
want to just get rid of physical symptoms. You want to see changes in the person, right? So she
right.
told me that the community that she had been living with wanted her to work in this certain capacity as an artisan. And she was secretly harboring a resentment that she never expressed, that she wanted to do strike out on her own and do something different. So she came back and announced to me that she announced to them that she wanted to do this different thing, and it took a lot of courage for her to do that, and lo and behold, they responded perfectly, agreeably, and said, sure, you can go do what you want, and she was thrilled by this, and she noticed all these changes. Now, over the course of the past couple of years, I've just occasionally given her a dose of this particular medicine, which is made from a mineral.
Can you tell me what it is?
Yeah, it's called Natrum Muriaticum. It's a medicine made from sodium chloride. And
okay.
She's gotten a dose of that every few months over the course of a couple of years. And today she came in, and I was stunned because it was really great, you know. She said to me, I think I figured it out. And I said, what do you mean? You know, she said, well, I think I was not intended to be conceived. And I think that my parents didn't want me in the world and didn't want to have me. And I've always resented that, and I've always harbored that feeling. But I'd never said that to anyone before. And so there's this remarkable breakthrough that's occurring along with her almost complete resolution of MS symptoms. So as her MS disappears, she keeps growing and changing on a psychological, spiritual level, and she's making remarkable progress. And that's like an ideal case to me. That's what you want to see. You want to see changes not just in physical symptoms. You want to see changes in the person as they get well again.
Right, right, exactly. Well, that's excellent that you've helped so many people, and with your tell us a little bit more about the new book. It's called what is it called? I'm sorry.
Oh, it's called Metaphysics and Medicine, and the basic idea behind the book is that, you know, it's important that medical science not be simply thought of as a science. It has to be understood that there is a philosophy, a worldview, a metaphysical worldview that underlies conventional medical science that makes it what it is. And the metaphysical worldviews of myself and you and Amy are completely different. We don't agree with that metaphysical worldview, right? And your philosophy, your metaphysics, determines your worldview, which should determine the type of medicine that you subscribe to. And that's what the book is about. It goes into depth about the biases of conventional medicine, its metaphysics, its false beliefs about materialism and reductionism and dualism and rationalism, all of these ideas that have formed the foundation of science that are not compatible with life and illness and health. They're not compatible with living beings. Those metaphysical beliefs of science are compatible with dead, inert matter that has no life to it, right? So medicine and science tends to treat human beings as if we are dead, inert substances that need to be manipulated through the tools of science without understanding that there's a life force, that there's consciousness, that there's a psyche, that there's a soul that needs to be taken into account. But science, medical science, won't touch that with a 10-foot pole because,
right,
because they say it's not scientific. So it's sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy. You know, that's not scientific, therefore we won't go near it, even though it has everything to do with why we are healthy or why we are sick, right?
And yeah.
So those biases, those isms of medicine, you know, materialism and dualism and rationalism and so on, essentially prevent freedom of speech in the scientific world and prevent freedom of speech in the medical world. We're not allowed to talk about these things. If you talked about the things we're talking about now in a hospital or a medical setting, they'd laugh you out of the place, right?
Yeah.
They would say, no, we need to stick strictly to the science. Let's look at the numbers. Let's look at the lab values. Let's look at the x-rays. And don't tell me about, you know, the death of your parent, or don't tell me about the jealousy you feel over your girlfriend flirting with another guy or whatever. You know, don't tell me about that stuff. Or else, you know, go see the psychiatrist because I can't be bothered with that, even though it has everything to do with our states of health.
Right,
and
right.
That's kind of the essence of the book. It's talking about all of these beliefs of medicine. And then in the end it proposes, you know, another worldview which we've been talking about here today, that should be incorporated into a more authentic form of science, a more authentic form of science which should be able to take into account the subjective psyche, take into account consciousness, take into account all the things that we talk about, that you talk about on your show, parapsychological phenomena, and all of these things are relevant to who we are and our states of health.
Right.
The last
Excellent.
Chapter of the... Oh, I'm sorry. Just
no, go
right
ahead,
in.
Amy.
The last chapter of the book is called The Rebirth of Medical Philosophy. And could you just talk a minute about the word I find interesting is rebirth. That there was a time when medical treatment incorporated these ideas, and we slipped away from it.
Sure.
Is that what
right.
that chapter is about? And
yes,
why
absolutely.
Is it? I mean, I'm going to ask a whole bunch of things in one little question, and then you can just speak to the whole
and
thing, the whole thing at the
okay.
same time. Is that why do scientists? You know, my mentor, Raymond Moody, is not just a medical doctor, but he also has a doctorate in philosophy, and a lot of his work is. Some of his best work is really philosophical, and we're actually working right now to publish his book called The Logic of Nonsense, which really shoots holes in how much we rely upon nonsense, you know, to prove scientific thought. But
mm-hmm.
why is it, I go back to when he went up to New York and did that debate with those guys whose name I can't even remember. Why is it that the fans of, and you know who I'm talking about, that guy, because he's all over the internet. Anyway, there's a whole bunch of them. Why is it that the sort of the atheist, you know, I don't want to just, you know, the atheist scientists, they just so don't want to, they just don't want anything to do with it. It's like insulting or embarrassing or something. I mean, they
right.
talk about dogma. I mean, there's just so much dogma
right.
wrapped up in non-believing. So anyway, if you could just talk to that whole babble.
Sure.
Stuff.
Yeah, so there's two main things there. You're talking first about the rebirth and then about the skeptic movement. So, you know, it is the rebirth of medical philosophy because back at the beginning of the scientific revolution and prior to the beginning of the scientific revolution, people weren't just scientists. They were educated people who were well-versed in mathematics, science, philosophy, theology, religion, you know, astronomy, astrology, and so on. These great thinkers were not scientists as we think of them today, you know, as we think of scientists today. They were very well.
So you're saying go get a good liberal arts education.
You bet. They were very well-rounded individuals, and even though they could potentially, you know, over time compartmentalize science and talk about science, they still had very serious interests in spirituality and metaphysics and philosophy, and so that was very important to them. And nowadays, we've come to this scientific age where the world is so compartmentalized, where we're not allowed to think about certain things if we're not so-called experts in fields of in these different fields, as if we're supposed to shut our mouths because we don't have the expertise to be able to talk about these things.
Right.
And yet, as far as I'm concerned, you know, if you get a good, strong, like you said, liberal arts education, you should be able to talk about all of these things and talk about the interconnections between them. And so we do need to have a rebirth in thinking about the nature of medicine, the nature of health, the nature of healing, the nature of illness, the nature of disease, and what it's all about. Because we've stopped thinking about it. We're just going we're painting by the numbers, because here's what science says, this is the way it's going to be, there is no philosophy involved, you're not supposed to think about it, don't challenge the dogma, and so we do need to reintroduce thought, freedom of thought, back into our healing system, right? It's not a healing system unless you can do that, right?
Right.
So the other thing you were talking about is this, you know, skeptic movement, which is enormous and powerful. It goes along with the polarized nature of the world that we live in now. You know, in a certain sense, I was trying to think about this before I came on tonight. Both holistic medicine and, you know, psi studies, the paranormal and parapsychological and all things consciousness, are kind of, both things are stuck in the middle of this war going on around us, where you have people on the right who are science deniers, you know, where they'll just deny the reality of climate change, to deny the reality of, or the potential reality of evolution, and so on. And on the other side of the equation, you have extreme left-wingers who are defenders of science, who poo-poo and sneer at anything new agey, because they are the strict materialists. They only believe in material reality, right? Not to say that everybody on the left thinks like that, but there are a lot of people on the left who do think like that. And they need to be criticized for that, for their narrow-mindedness. So they look across the gulf at the right wing and say, you guys are crazy fundamentalists. And I look at the left-wing defenders of science who don't believe in any form of consciousness. And I say, you guys are the crazy fundamentalists, too. You're both crazy fundamentalists staking out extreme positions while we're standing in the middle saying, wait. There's a reality to physical reality and there's a reality to psychic reality. And this so-called skeptic movement are these defenders of science who in reality aren't defending true science. To me, true science is a sort of open-minded attitude that inquires into the world around us to learn about the world we live in, right? But they are defenders of the dogmas of science. They defend the dogmas of science. They are the skeptics. They call themselves skeptics. And they're the ones who scream that holistic medicine is pseudoscience, right? And they call psychic studies woo, right? And they're the ones who are being dogmatic. They are the ones who, when I say, well, there actually are a good number of scientific studies that back up the ideas behind acupuncture or homeopathy or herbal medicine, and they say, oh, that's baloney. That's not good science. That's not real science, right? So they're just kind of dogmatic fundamentalists who dig their heels in, because in reality, I think the bottom line is they're terrified of any kind of spiritual or religious take on human existence. That scares them, and they don't want to believe that there's that kind of non-scientific, uncertain nature of reality, that they can't cling on to something dogmatic like the hardcore nature of material science, right? Material science makes them feel safe and secure and comfortable. Religion, philosophy, metaphysics, spirituality scares the heck out of them because it's so open to interpretation and to each individual person's experience of those things.
Right. And they would have to deconstruct their belief that they've learned their whole life and build it again with new whatever, and they don't want to do that. And this is why some people, Larry, you know this probably better than most, is that some people don't want to let go of their illnesses. They like them. They become best friends with their illness, you know?
Yes, and any kind of rigid thinking like that can contribute to illness, right? And it is a manifestation of a lack of flexibility on the psychological, mental, emotional level that is not healthy. And it is very hard for them to think otherwise. And the world around us now is very unique and remarkable, our time in history, because it's so polarized that all contributes to this. Everything is black or white. We're either liberals or conservatives or Republicans or Democrats or Northerners or Southerners or whites or blacks or whatever, and it's just, it's really crazy out there, and it's not very healthy, and it's people like us that have to educate the world and hope to enlighten people a little bit so that they can step out of those boxes and not pen themselves into one dogmatic way of seeing things.
Are you seeing any movement in the traditional medical community and the traditional scientific community to embrace some of these concepts? What I've seen as a patient is sort of some lip service to it. I remember when I had breast cancer, it was in Palm Beach, so there was a lot of money, and there was this center for integrative health, and after I went and got my $20,000 worth of chemo pumped through my body and my $8,000 shot that was supposed to help my immune system, I could go over to the woo-woo place and chant and do some aromatherapy and stuff like that, but it just seemed more like a mission statement on a wall kind of thing than truly integrated into the overall course of treatment, if that makes any sense. But are you seeing doctors embracing this?
Willing to embrace it. I mean, there are individual doctors who are embracing all sorts of really cool things, right? And there are groups and societies that embrace these things. You know, there are, like, you know, the Holistic Medical Association and the Homeopathic Medical Association and so on and so forth. But that's all great, and it's slowly creeping into the system, but very slowly, glacially slowly, you know. And the problem is that when the system gets its hands on something, it tends to corrupt it, you know. It loses mm-hmm. all of its, it loses its meaning and its original impact when that woo-woo center, as you say, where you can go meditate or do some yoga on the side, is really there as a marketing gimmick to get more patients.
Correct.
And
exactly.
It's not there because they really believe in it. It's there because they say, you know, if we get a couple massage therapists and a aromatherapy person and so on and so forth, you know, that maybe we'll get some more patients in here. And so the change has to come from within, you know, not as a gimmick on the outside, not as fancy bells and whistles that we're adding to the system to dazzle you with our new aginess, you know. And so you tend to see the serious medicine being practiced out there by individuals who are sometimes apart from the system because they can't be part of the system or else they wouldn't be able to do what they do, you know. Not to say that everyone's like that, but there are some unique individuals who can manage both worlds quite well. And you know, I my hat's off to those people who can do that, you know.
Are there other countries that are doing a good job of this? It seems that perhaps, you know, India or some of the Asian countries or something where there's been, you know, where some of this stuff was a part of their religion. Are they more receptive to it?
Definitely. You know, and that's kind of the curse of the American system. It's so darn regulated. It's so darn rigid. It's so darn tied to big money that very little can get into the system. But in other countries, you have much more open-minded people, open-minded populaces, open-minded doctors. So like India has literally thousands and thousands of homeopathic doctors and hundreds of homeopathic hospitals. It's a very strong movement. And the government just came out just recently in support of creating, a government agency that oversees and protects holistic medicine. And like a country like Switzerland, you know, they looked at the so-called evidence and decided that, gee, many of these alternative forms of medicine work and they're good. So they incorporated those treatments into the National Health Service. And so they are part of the system there, you know. And in a place like Germany, where homeopathy began, where the founder of homeopathy, Samuel Hahnemann, practiced medicine, homeopathy is very popular among these people. So there's a lot of great movements across the globe, and even in impoverished countries, you know, what's really cool is that they're starting to understand that, you know, these drugs and these vaccines don't make us healthy. They're seeing that these things being imported into their countries, and they're seeing the damage that can happen. So there was, Cuba's been the hot topic in the news these days, but there was a an illness, an epidemic illness in Cuba called leptospirosis. And they literally did a homeopathic study there where they took the leptospirosis organism and through this process of diluting it and shaking it repeatedly, they turned it into a homeopathic medicine and then administered it to all the people. And they were stunned to see this remarkable decline in the incidence of leptospirosis. And now they're starting to do this in other countries, too, with epidemic diseases, and they're finding that there are actually good results using this very low-tech form of medicine that is very safe and not nearly as dangerous as vaccines or drugs, you know. So these things are spreading around the globe, but they have particular trouble making headway in the United States where, you know, there's such a corporate grip on the medical-industrial complex, you know.
Oh, see, and it goes from all angles. You know, we look at, I mean, I can just, from being a cancer patient, you know, the American Cancer Society, you know, so certainly Susan G. Komen, you know, it's and I don't want to sound like, you know, some tinfoil conspiracy crazy lady, but they're all working for the same, you know, they're funding medicine, you know, instead of something that you take. You know, there are more and more medicines that you just stay on for the rest of your, you know, regulating, you know, they're supposed to regulate and, you know, treat the symptoms and things like that. So as a patient, what, I mean, it's coming to mind some of the things that we can do. Like, for one thing, I probably picked the wrong health insurance, because instead of picking the one where you go and have the, you know, the copay and stuff, I should probably go with the major medical insurance. And then use my, you know, because we need to vote with our dollar. We need to vote with our dollars. So it's all well
right.
and good for me to be on the radio talking about how great this is, you know, but then I go to my doctor and, you know, get my, you know, I take Adderall. I'm horribly addicted to it. And not that that's, you know, I'm not that ashamed of it because I just said it. But, you know, there's a huge contradiction there. And I'm thinking that one thing we should do is, you know, get the health insurance that gives us the most choices, right? And seek out doctors who are homeopaths and things. I mean, because really, the dollars are going to conventional wisdom.
Yeah, the greatest way to change the system would be to, like you say, vote with your purse, right? But it's easier said than done, you know, as you just described. You know, you're stuck in kind of this no man's land. You don't have a system that allows you to do that. You've got to take great risk to, you know, on the one hand, you have this issue that you need that needs treatment, so you depend on this drug that they give you, but you'd like to find some other way, but it's not so easy. And the system does encourage doctors to learn these other ways, and I have to go searching around and looking for someone who can help me. And sometimes you encounter legitimate people who are very good at what they do, and sometimes you encounter people who just slapped up a shingle and don't know what the heck they're doing, and, you know, and everything in between. So it's a minefield out there, and you've got to navigate the system. You've got to keep yourself insured in the event that you have some catastrophe, or in a, God forbid, in a car accident and break all your bones, and they're going to, you know, if you don't have that insurance, it's going to cost you $100,000. You know, the system is sick and it's broken, but at the same time, you know, if you're not insured, you're placing yourself at great risk. And then also, you got to find a way to, you know, vote with your dollars and find alternatives. You know, the nice thing is that what most people find is that if they invest their money in getting some well-established alternative forms of medical treatment, they find that they are healthier in the long run, that they need the system less, that they take less drugs, and they don't get as sick as often, and they don't depend on the system as often. So in the long run, it tends to be economically a good bet, you know. In the short run, it may cost you in the short run to put out that money for that initial treatment. But in the long run, it can save a lifetime of misery, you know.
Yeah. And I'm kind of just thinking out loud right now, but, you know, us as consumers really have to do more than just post Monsanto sucks, pictures on our Facebook walls.
Don't underestimate the power of that, though.
as you're driving through the CVS window to get your whatever. And
right.
we do have choices, and some of the choice, you know, and I think that it's important for the listeners, and I'm including myself as a listener, to vote with their pocketbook and make some choices. For example, if you choose the health savings account medical insurance option, if you've got medical insurance where you work, where you're not covered, you don't get the $3 copays on the prescriptions and all of this sort of stuff, but you have an accumulation of money and you have more choices. So if
right,
this is something
right.
that we're passionate about, we need to be aware of the things that we can, the things that we can do. Because
indeed.
People are protected from the reality of the medical system. They don't see how much money goes into paying for their services. They they pay the copay and they walk away and they don't see anything. And they'd be shocked if they understood how much money it costs to see that specialist or how much money goes to pay for that drug that they're getting for their copay, right? And if they saw that, they might start to revolt and say, this is crazy, you know, because we're getting ripped off.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, it's certainly not consumer-based medicine right now. But anyway, I've gone off on a tangent.
That's okay. We only have a couple minutes left. Larry, tell us where we can find you.
You can find me at two different websites. My medical clinic website for people looking for treatment is called drmhomeopathy.com. So it's drmhomeopathy.com. And my website, where I have many articles and videos and interviews and so on, and a giant picture gallery of medical history, is called spiritsciencehealing.com, all together, spiritsciencehealing.com. And so those are the two places where people can find out about the stuff I'm doing.
Oh, great. And Larry,
and of course,
I have
your book, which are available on, is the best place to get them on Amazon? Is that where they give you the...
Oh, you can get them anywhere. You can find Green Medicine and Metaphysics in Medicine on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and so on. It's all anywhere on the web. You'll find that stuff.
Okay. Larry, I just want to thank you so very much for joining us tonight, and you are just fabulous. You enlightened us to many things, and I so much appreciate you coming by and talking to us.
Thanks, Karine. I really appreciate being invited, and this was really a great conversation. Thanks so much for having me.
Sure, and hopefully we can have you
too,
on again at some point. Yeah. And thanks, everyone, for listening, and you guys have an amazing night and rest of the weekend. And we will talk to you soon. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, Karine.
Thanks, Amy.
Thanks, guys.
Bye, Larry.
Hey. Still there? Bye-bye.